I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, an infamous Seattle public school teacher defends Hamas murders on camera. When is enough enough?
Was what happened to Israel on October 7th justified?
Yes.
Plus, the Washington Post calls the very real squatter crisis a right-wing talking point. And the internet goes wild over a transgender public defender in Seattle. But to be clear, it's not the fact that she's transgender that's the problem. That and more coming up today on Undivided. If you want to support our show, you can do that for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Once upon a time I was falling in love. Now I'm only falling apart. Something hit a total eclipse of the heart. We're alive. See, we made it past the eclipse. No big deal. All the people who said this is going to be the end of the world.
Right.
Part of me was like, I'm cool with that. I'm just kidding, you guys. It's not suicidal ideation. All right, let me start the show with the really important breaking news that every single one of you need to know about. It's my mom's birthday. Happy birthday, Sandy. Love my mother. And you know what Sandy did for her birthday?
Watch the eclipse.
Yes, a friend of really ruined that for me, Nicole.
Oh, sorry.
That was a lot of buildup there. A friend of hers was like, you want to go watch the eclipse? So they drove from Minnesota down to Illinois, like did 18 hours.
Wow. I didn't know that when I just
said
that.
Slept in their car. Yeah, so my mom enjoyed a total eclipse of the sun, we're back here. And we're going to talk about a total eclipse of common sense, because that is what's happening in the state of Washington. You see what I did there? God, I'm good. I want to start, though, with a teacher we talked about on the show quite a bit. And as you notice, I don't have my computer today, if you're watching. Should I just say what happened?
I think you should, because you gave me a bad time about it a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I forgot my computer charger. So here I am, like it's freaking 1985, and I got to do my whole show without a computer and just pieces of paper and notes.
Karma's a B word.
I'm fired. You're getting the best of me today. Hey, I used to do this. I'm fine. I don't need a computer.
It's fine.
I have a cell phone. So we've talked about Ian Golash a ton. Ian Golash is a Seattle public school teacher, and he has been in the news fairly consistently since 2020. There's an update on him that I'm a little... I don't want to say hopeful, but hopeful that maybe we have finally figured out what it takes to get in trouble as a Seattle public school teacher. Because up until now, I mean, it didn't seem like there was any standard whatsoever for the people who educate our youth. So just a quick reminder of the rap sheet, so to speak, the activist rap sheet for Ian Golash. So you might recall he was in the news because he failed a student for saying on a quiz that men can't get pregnant. So I don't know why you're giving students a quiz like that, but the student's like, oh yeah, men can't get pregnant, and Ian Golash failed him. So that was in the news. And then around the same time, people started digging into all sorts of other things, and it turned out he's just very pro-Hamas. And on his Facebook page, he was saying that Hamas didn't behead anyone, Hamas didn't rape anyone, basically this whole anti-Israeli screed. And he also had pro-Palestine posters outside of his classroom in the Seattle Public School District, which was making some teachers or some parents and some students uncomfortable, as you can understand. So all of that was in the last few months, but I remembered Ian Golash because back when I was, I think, just starting this job, no, was it 2020? No, I think I was at Fox 13 at the time. Yeah, I was at Fox 13 at the time because I did a story on this. And actually at the time, Jonathan Cho was working for Como News. And he was outside the King County Jail because a teacher, Ian Golash, led his students on a protest inside the King County Jail. And Ian Golash came out and harassed news crews and blocked cameras.
Hey, do you want Cairo filming?
No, we don't want you guys. We don't want you.
I'm not Cairo, bro.
We don't have permission to use any of that.
We don't want it.
Yeah, really good influence on young people. Really great influence on young people. Not only are you leading them in a protest into a government building, a jail, but you are deferring to the children about whether they want a free press to be on government property filming what's happening. And when the children say no, you come out, kids swearing in the background, your students, and you put a hand in the face of a news camera. And I will say, at the time with Ian Golash, I did a story on this, and I reached out to the Seattle Public School District. And they knew very well what kind of guy they had in their employ. He had done stuff previously to that as well. And when he was blocking news cameras and I'd reached out to SPS as a member of the mainstream news, they basically put out a statement saying, we respect First Amendment rights, to which I'm like, what about the First Amendment rights of the news media? So obviously nothing happened to Ian Golash at the time. And then fast forward, you had all these other stories that were starting to stack up. Well, we might have finally found what it's going to take for the dominoes to fall on Ian Golash. So there was a video put out by an organization that sort of looks to hold media accountable and does stuff on education and other issues. And they did an interview on camera with Ian Golash at a demonstration, and it is nothing short of insane.
Your post said that their oppressors don't get to choose the form of resistance used against them. You didn't write that?
That is true.
Well, then was what happened to Israel on October 7th justified?
Yes.
The rape of women at a music festival was justified.
Where's the evidence that there was rape?
You don't think there was any rape?
Where's the evidence that there was rape?
Okay. Were women murdered at the music festival?
They were.
Was that justified?
Yes.
The murder of innocent women just attending a music festival, that was justified in your opinion?
Wow. Wow.
No. I think resistance against Israel is justified, yes.
That's insane. If he's in a classroom in the Seattle Public School District today, shame on SPS. He should immediately be on leave while they look into this, because you know them. They've got to look into it. And I'll read a statement from SPS in a moment. That is horrific. Horrific. And you got kids standing around him, listening to him say, oh, no one was raped. Was the murder of innocent women at a music festival justified? Yes. That's a Seattle public school teacher that has been doing stuff like this for years that in any sane environment would have gotten a teacher fired and gotten away with it. And we wonder why he's so emboldened to say stuff like that around students in front of a camera. Just like we talk about with juveniles in the crime crisis. Why would people not be committing crimes? They realize they can get away with it. Why would he not be doing these things as a teacher? He knows he can get away with it. That's why you have teachers that participate in all the riots we have in the city and get arrested, and it's no big deal. Vandalize a Starbucks, caught on camera, no big deal. Seattle Public School District has no standards, no standards for the teachers in their employ. And I'm not saying there's not good teachers in the Seattle Public School District, but this is beyond the point of ridiculous. This is dangerous. And can you imagine having a Jewish student at SPS? Can you imagine being a Jewish family and having a Jewish student at the school where Ian Golash teaches every day after he just said that the murder of innocent Israeli women, Jewish women, was justified? Unreal. Unreal. So Jason Rance did an article on this where he did some follow-up reporting. And I would note that, you know, we just did a story on the show last week about how Jason Rance found these internal emails at SPS where they basically aren't going to respond to his questions for comment and all that because he's a conservative. So they've got stuff like this going on with Ian Golash at their school, teachers who condone murder and rape. And that's fine. But, oh, Jason Rance is a conservative, so we've got to, we can't interact with him at all. They have really high standards when it comes to what members of the media they interact with, but really low standards when it comes to who's employed in their building. So this is the article from Jason Rance. Seattle teacher recorded defending Hamas rape and murder, pushed BDS on students. There's just another wrinkle in the Ian Golash story. It says Golash brought his classroom off campus to meet with someone and be interviewed. There didn't appear to be parental consent, which would likely be required. An SPS spokesperson refused to answer questions concerning student involvement. But one student who spoke made it clear that they believe Golosh is too extreme for the classroom. Quote, honestly, how has he not been fired? I mean, I read his social media posts. He's anti-Semitic and he's a criminal, I think. A student told, who is this Goliath? The guy interviewing him, right?
Right. The people, I forget the name of their, it's on the video.
Their Accuracy in Media.
Yes.
So it's this guy with Accuracy in Media. And so that's who he's referring to. So a student says on camera with him, how has he not been fired? So this is what SPS has said now in a statement. Seattle Public Schools is looking into the matter to determine the facts, which is like, what do you mean the facts? He said it on camera, you mm-hmm. know? And I know that he's talking about also students being brought off campus to participate in this without any sort of permission. While our review is in process, we will not comment on personnel matters related to this topic. Creating high quality and inclusive educational environments for our students is a top priority for SPS. Bullshit. Oh, bullshit. SPS does not tolerate anti-Semitic or Islamophobic speech or acts in our schools or offices. And you see how they add in Islamophobia because we can't just condemn anti-Semitism on an island. We also have to play, well, what aboutism and talk about Islamophobia. Do you have teachers, SPS, spewing blatant Islamophobia? Do you have teachers saying on camera that it's okay to kill Muslims? That's justified? That Muslim women aren't raped? Do you have a teacher on camera doing those things? No, and if you did, they'd be fired. They would be fired instantly, as they should be, if you had a teacher on camera saying that killing Muslims is justified. Instantly fired, instantly fired. And you wouldn't put out in a statement, you wouldn't add anti-Semitism. You would say, Islamophobia isn't tolerated. You wouldn't say and anti-Semitism. Because we don't have to do a whataboutism. We're talking about anti-Semitism. That is the issue at hand here. No doubt in my freaking mind, if it was someone saying, a teacher saying, any other group or class of people, that it's justified to kill them, they would not be employed. But for some reason, it's okay to kill Jewish people? And you're going to continue to employ that person? And this hiding behind the stupid guise of, we won't discuss personnel matters. You're a public institution. You answer to parents. You answer to the public. You answer to the rest of us who might not be parents, but we pay the tax dollars that keep your schools open. That is not going to do it in this case. It's not going to do it. He should be fired today. There's no facts. What was that? Looking into the matter to determine the facts. There's no facts to look into. He said it on camera, unedited. And it is in line with his previous statements on social media. It is in line with other things that he has said and done. Ian Golosh is not fit. He is not fit to be a teacher. I cannot believe that we continue to have this conversation. How many red flags? And I guarantee he's not the only teacher doing this kind of stuff. Maybe that brazenly. Super brazen. He doesn't think there's any consequences for him. SPS, please God, show us that there's consequences for him. And think about the Jewish students and the Jewish families and how they must be feeling. For one freaking second, put the ideology aside and just do what's right. Crazy stuff. Is that the line? I mean, if they fire the guy, then I guess we know the line, right? For Seattle Public School teachers. You can get away with a lot. The bar is really, really low for your behavior. But let's hope the line is at least, yeah, you can't condone the murder of an entire group of people.
But they have to think about it first.
But they have to think about it. And they have to go through the facts of it. Oh, and meanwhile, they're not going to respond to requests for comment from Jason Rantz because he's a conservative. And that's just too far. That's just a bridge too far. Teacher who's okay with Jewish people being killed? You know, benefit of the doubt. Mental. Homeschool your kids. Home, what was my song? Homeschool your children if you can.
And vote for Chad.
And vote for Chad Magandans. We should reach out to the office. Will you reach out to the Office of Superintendent of Public mm-hmm. Instruction? Because, you know, we've had him in, Chris Reichdahl, the head of our state's public school system. And he really punts on those questions when we talk about some of the really off-the-wall things happening in the Seattle Public School District, in the Olympia School District that have been highly publicized. He sort of conveniently is like, oh, well, I haven't heard of that, or, you know, I can't comment on that individual matter. Well, this is, send him the video. Should this person be employed still? Bottom line, is this behavior acceptable around students? If there is one Jewish person who votes for a Democrat this election cycle, I just don't even know what to say to you, to be honest. I mean, you do you, but that's ridiculous. All right, speaking of absolute absurdity, wow, I'm loving this paper version. When I have a pen in my hand, I'm very aggressive with the pen. There's something about holding a pen that really makes me feel powerful. Maybe I'll write something here.
That's why we should write more, right?
Maybe I'll take some notes. I don't know. I like it. I realize people who are going to listen to the podcast today and not watch the show are probably like, okay, I can't even see that you don't have a computer, Brandy. Just stop. All right. The Washington Post. So just so you know how some of this works with the media, because sometimes the Seattle Times has ridiculous stories. Sometimes the Seattle Times wrote those stories, and sometimes those stories come from partners of the Seattle Times, like the Washington Post. That is the case with this next story. However, the Seattle Times can always choose not to run a story. They don't have to take every story and put it on their pages that comes down from a wire service or from the Washington Post. They can decide that it doesn't meet their editorial standards. They can decide that it's not appropriate for their readership. So this is a choice. This is a choice for the Seattle Times to have run this story from the Washington Post. And I mean, this is sort of like, it seems like a Babylon Bee headline, but it was only a matter of time before the media ecosystem started to try to run stories to undermine the growing narrative around landlord-tenant rights and the growing narrative that is waking people up to just how absurd some of these tenant protections are and some of the protections for full-blown squatters. So you recall on the show last week on Florida Report, or maybe the week before, we talked about how Governor Ron DeSantis in Florida, he said, look, we're not allowing squatters in Florida. He signed a new bill into law that basically says if someone's squatting in your house without a lease, you just call the cops. And as long as you can show them that, then the cops will just tell them to leave. You don't have to go through some long, protracted legal battle to get a stranger out of your house who is not supposed to be there. So Washington Post just can't have that. You can't have a governor who solves problems. This is the headline. Squatters have become a right-wing talking point. What to know about the rare practice? This is insane. Let me read a little of this for you. The national conversation around squatters has reached a fever pitch in recent weeks, spurred by conflicts that have gone viral and legislative actions in at least four states. Squatting is extremely rare, according to experts, so rare that there is no reliable data available on the number of squatters across the country. But with a handful of high-profile cases of property owners going to court to evict illegal residents, a right-wing media frenzy, and the introduction of state bills, the topic has become ubiquitous. Here's what you need to know. Oh, please, Washington Post, tell us what we need to know about this right-wing talking point. It says, is squatting really a problem? The short answer, experts say, no. I read that, I'm like, who are these experts? Juan Pablo Garman, a researcher and communications manager at Princeton University's Eviction Lab, called squatting, quote, an extremely rare issue. Ah, yes, not a problem at all, but we need a whole eviction lab at Princeton University. Dunn, who started his law career in Detroit, and this is a different expert, said, quote, where there's more abandoned homes than the city can count, said, quote, I can probably count on one hand the number of legitimate squatting cases I've seen in Detroit. Absolute ridiculousness. Satish Nori, a clinical adjutant professor of housing rights at NYU Law School, said, quote, I haven't heard a single case recently in which a homeowner says there's squatters in their home. Yeah, these are the people who we're using as experts to say whether squatting is real. People who work for ideologically aligned programs in far-left universities. NYU Law School, and he's the clinical professor of housing rights. Yeah, that's really the guy who's going to tell the truth about what landlords are going through in our country.
And in
Juan
New York?
Pablo Garman, researcher at Princeton University's Eviction Lab, which you know is just about, oh, you can't evict people. That's horrible. Mm-hmm.
And the New York case that we just played a couple weeks ago, maybe we need to show that person
Has
that
the
video.
NYU professor not heard of the lady who literally got arrested trying to evict full-blown squatters out of the home her parents were in?
Not one
And then
case.
Died? I'm going to get into more of this, but it's like, this is one of the things I see with the homeless crisis, right? How the media says, oh, it's a housing affordability issue, which is just not true. And it's not true by any stretch. But for them, ideologically, that is the safe thing to say. And they don't want to go out and actually speak to homeless people and find out that there are many of them drug addicted, mentally ill, or both, and that you could offer them housing and they'd say no. They can't do that. So they just want to toe this line over here. And so now they want to say, conservatives are really gaining traction on this landlord-tenant issue. Can't have that. So what's the party line? This is rare. It's not even a problem. Yeah, tell that to Jaskaran Singh. Tell that to the Bellevue landlord who's been trying to get a squatter out of his house for 2 years, which, by the way, there was another protest outside of that house where the squatter is still squatting.
Get out, con man.
Housing Justice Project is fighting against us to protect this tenant. They are using our tax dollars, our property tax dollars, to fight against us as they're providing free attorney and all other legal fees to this tenant. Where is our governor, Jay Inslee?
Where is governor, Jay Inslee?
Where is Senator Patty Kudrow?
Where is Senator Patty Kudrow?
Claudia Balducci?
We want change. If this current leadership can't change it, we need to change the leadership.
If that's anything to me, that just seems like a right-wing talking point. Completely manufactured story by the right-wing media frenzy. Not at all a real issue. Not at all a real issue that a taxpayer-funded organization in the Housing Justice Project cut a $47,000 check with your money, with my money, to pay the back rent owed by a serial squatter who's just going to go and do this again. That's not an issue. That's a right-wing talking point. Jason Roth, who had a squatter in his house in South Seattle for a year? Right-wing talking point. That didn't even happen. One of the reasons this is gaining traction is because more and more landlords are actually speaking out about what's already been happening to them. For every story that we talk about, that we actually find out about, there are hundreds of stories that we never find out about. And in fact, Nicole and I have gotten emails from other landlords experiencing similar issues. Some of them aren't ready to go on the record. And some of them we just don't pick up because we have so many other stories. So you have these extreme examples of people who have been squatting for 2 years or a year, like Jason Roth and what's happening to Jimmy in Bellevue. And then you have people who are dealing with stuff on a smaller scale, but it's still impacting them in a big way. Especially if you only have a couple properties and now you're out tens of thousands of dollars. It's stealing. It's theft. And it is a big deal. We've had video. How many videos have we shown where you've got an illegal immigrant who is encouraging people, telling people how they can go squat in homes and what kind of rights they have? Whether it's a right-wing talking point or not, whether the conservative media has globbed onto something that is rare, as they suggest, the fact that the laws allow for this is a problem in and of itself. Even if we hadn't heard a single story about serial squatters or a single story about tenants who stopped paying rent, the fact that the laws allow for it and protect them and give them free attorneys while screwing over landlords, that's problem enough. That's a problem that needs to be addressed. It needs to be fixed. That doesn't make it a right-wing talking point. And this is why no one trusts the media. Just as we're talking about these stories, just as it's gaining traction, just as landlords are hoping, hey, maybe this will change, maybe the laws will change. Washington Post, right-wing talking point. It's really absurd. It's laughable. Why anyone would continue to subscribe to the Washington Post, the New York Times, hell, the Seattle Times. I mean, the Seattle Times has good stories here and there. I think their editorial board is overall sound. But some of the wild stuff that they post that is specifically designed to undercut any sort of issue that conservatives talk about that starts to become popular in the court of public opinion, these outlets have to undercut it. Have to undercut it. And it is such an abuse of the power that they have as members of the media. Go look into this. This is the other thing about this. The whole idea that it's rare. Squatting is extremely rare. So rare that there is no reliable data available on the number of squatters across the country. That's because a lot of people squat in properties and it never gets, where is it going to get reported? What kind of data set would exist for that? And you're saying, oh, in Detroit, there's only a handful of squatters. Have you gone into all of the abandoned homes in Detroit? I mean, look, if somebody's squatting in an abandoned home that like no one owns and it was condemned, that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about tenants who said they were going to pay rent and didn't. And yes, in some extreme examples, we're talking about people who break into a home and then claim it as their own and challenge the owner of that home to evict them. But to act like this isn't happening, that it's a manufactured controversy from the right wing, is so in line with what the media has become. Absolutely unreal. It's just crazy. All right, coming up next, we're going to have a conversation with Federal Way Mayor Jim Ferrell, who is, I think, excited, as the rest of us are, to see whether rolling back the bad police pursuit law will actually help decrease some of the crime and stolen vehicles that we're experiencing in our communities. First, I've been talking to my friend Wes Jones of sellwithwes.com about the state of the real estate market. 2023, not great. 2024, though, especially if the Fed drops interest rates, you could see this rush to the market. But Wes said even if the Fed doesn't drop interest rates as it has forecasted it will, he does still think that 2024 is going to be an improvement upon 2023.
If they stay where they're at right now, I actually think that values will stay closer to where they're at. We'll see lower appreciation. We'll see appreciation, but it'll be modest. But if they start to come back down, well, that's when I think we'll start to see more of the multiple offer situations and the bid ups in home sale prices.
Yeah. So if you're thinking about selling your home in 2024, make sure you get a head start so your home is ready to hit the market, especially if interest rates drop. Sellwithwes.com. Start by using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. And then if you're interested, contact Wes. He'll give you a free market analysis and he'll talk to you about how he can make it a completely stress-free process when you go to make some of the perhaps renovations or cosmetic updates that your home might need. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, this segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. All right, we have an interview today on the show with someone who I respect quite a bit. I'm laughing because there's a context here. Federal Way Mayor Jim Ferrell. We've had him on the show. He's a Democrat. He is a very moderate Democrat, and he has been outspoken for the last 2 years on the insanity that's happening with criminal justice, quote unquote, reform, the rollback of the police pursuit law. I mean, he has been one of the politicians who's really been at the forefront of being unafraid of speaking back against his own party, what they've done. He's in Olympia fighting to get the police pursuit law restored. And so, as you know, so it'll be June 6th. June 6th is when the initiative to restore reasonable police pursuits takes effect. So that was the initiative that Democrats kind of had no choice but to pass during the session. So June 6th. And I think June 6th is going to be a key moment for our state to really see if we can get a hold on this runaway crime crisis, particularly when it comes to stolen vehicles, which we know is just a small aspect of the crime issue where you steal a vehicle. You're not just stealing a vehicle, you're using it to commit other crimes. So if we can get a hold of that issue, I think it's going to have an absolute ripple effect on some of the other violent crime that we're seeing. So we want to have Jim Ferrell on because he came out and he talked to Como News, I think it was last week, and they had a police car stolen. Police vehicle, that's two snorts. Police vehicle stolen in Federal Way. The headline from Como News, quote, "We're going to track you down. Federal Way mayor sends warning to criminals." And so he had basically been on Como News saying, look, like as soon as this police pursuit law takes effect, we want criminals to know that we are going to pursue in the city of Federal Way. We are going to track them down. We're not going to take a passive approach to this. And so I asked Jim to come on and talk to us a little bit about what June 6th, what changes June 6th might bring. And I also had an opportunity to ask him about a political endorsement he made in the race for governor. Mayor Jim Ferrell, welcome back to Undivided.
Well, thank you for having me, Brandy.
Yeah, I think you're probably as excited as I am about the possibility of maybe having the new pursuit changes improve things a little bit. But before we get to that, you were on the news recently saying that crime is already kind of trending in the right direction in Federal Way.
Well, it was. The day after I said that, we had, unfortunately, a series of very, very horrible crimes in our community. I was on Como News, I believe it was Tuesday, talking about there was a slight reduction of 5% of overall crime in the first quarter. And then the very next day, we had the shooting at the Winco IHOP parking lot in our community, where a 2-year-old was killed tragically. And we're in the process of looking for that individual. And we've had, just that week, we had a couple more shootings. So we are doing everything we can to track down those people and hold them accountable. And I always say that, statistics are, it's really important to keep track of the numbers, but they're cold comfort to people that have been truly victimized. And so, we don't get lost for the forest for the trees. We're going to find those individuals that are responsible for these and track them down and hold them accountable.
Well, I'm happy to hear you say that, because I think too often, and what we've seen in Seattle too over the years, is some people in certain sectors of crime data, they're not reporting crime anymore. And so then it's like, oh, property theft went down, or, something like that. It's like, no, it didn't. People just stopped calling the cops. But yeah, I saw a tragedy with the 2-year-old at the IHOP. I hadn't seen that it was in federal way. Do you think that's gang related and it was just an innocent 2-year-old?
Well, I have been on the phone and in direct communication with the chief, the deputy chief, the commander, that's our PIO now, our public information officer, and really trying to drill into the details. This was an individual that had the victim was a father who had 2 children in his car. He was in the parking lot of the IHOP, which they share a parking lot with the Winco grocery store. I'm in that grocery store all the time. They've got on-site security there, and it's at a very prominent location. So, and this was literally in the IHOP parking lot. So it's really difficult to tell. It's an ongoing investigation. They clearly knew who this person was, the shooter or shooters that were, that did this. The intended victim, the person they were actually aiming for, they missed, and they struck that 2-year-old child. That's just awful.
It is.
We're going to find that individual and that pulled the trigger and do everything we can. But I'll tell you this, it was done in a stolen car. That car that came to that IHOP and did that shooting. And I don't want to get too much into the details because we're still tracking it down, except to say that car was stolen.
Yeah.
Which makes it very difficult to track down if you don't have a license plate, a point of origin. But we'll figure it out. We've got some leads and some good evidence, and we're gonna be relentless. We're gonna move heaven and earth to track that down. It's just horrible.
Well, and you talk about stolen car, and that just speaks to something you've been fighting for, we've been fighting for. I think common sense people, in regard to police pursuits, is just saying, look, people aren't just using stolen vehicles to go on a joyride. They're using them to commit really dangerous crimes. We have to be able to pursue them. So you had to be happy that the initiative passed through the legislature.
I was a little surprised, because I have to tell you, Randy, I go to all these meetings, these regional meetings with mayors and elected officials, and statewide, the Association of Washington Cities. And we kept hearing there's no appetite in Olympia to change the initiative law. I don't care what your appetite is. This has to happen. So myself and the chief and other like-minded, policy individuals and elected officials kept knocking on that door. And then very, very late in the session, it was determined, I'm sure through polling, that the majority thought we better not have this on the ballot with us. Because this is going to pass overwhelmingly.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you, this has really been an unacceptable social experiment that started several years ago. Sure that certain reforms, needed to occur and make, we've instituted, audio recordings for or audio and video recordings for our officers. And, there are certain things you have to have in place to make sure that rights are protected. But to unilaterally prevent officers from pursuing stolen cars, any kind of property crime, what happened is, you're likely aware, the state of Washington became per capita the leading location for car theft in the nation in raw numbers. And think about this, with California, New York, Florida, Texas, we were number 4 in the country in raw numbers for car theft. So the numbers just took off exponentially. Now, not only do I expect, and I think they saw the writing on the wall, and they very wisely passed that.
Yeah.
And we, myself and the chief were down there for the hearing they had on there, and they ran the clock out and didn't allow the chief and I to testify because we had quite a number of statistics and information to provide. What I can tell you is not only is the number going to drop, you're going to see the number, the bottom drop out of that number for car thefts, because the word will quickly get on the street that you can't just flee the police without consequence. And that's really what you've got. We're really between the essentially legalized crime and the de-enforcement of drugs and the decriminalization of drugs or the de facto and the lack of pursuits, and the way that certain communities and counties deal with the homeless and allowing runaway encampments, you've got a no consequence environment in which crime has been allowed to fester. And I think the pendulum is swinging back.
Gosh, I hope you're right. And I do hope you're right on the car theft numbers, that we're going to see those plummet. So there are some jurisdictions, Seattle PD, for instance, Bellevue PD, I think King County Sheriff's Office, their pursuit policies internally are already just about as strict as the state law that was changed in 2021. What about the city of Federal Way? So June 6th, when that initiative becomes law, what changes in Federal Way, if anything?
If it's safe, we'll chase you. I mean, you know, it's on. I mean, I have to say, Brandy, I don't know if you heard about this, but our operations and maintenance facility several months ago was burglarized. We caught these guys in the yard. They had our stolen trailer in the yard where we keep all of our equipment. They had $250,000 worth of our tools. They rammed the gate and then jumped on the freeway, and we literally couldn't chase them. We just saw $250,000. That's bizarre beyond that's really sort of otherworldly. I think the unintended consequences were so severe and really perpetuated injustices among all Washingtonians, because that increases the prices on a lot of things, and it just creates much more of a dangerous atmosphere. I can tell you as well, we had a number of businesses that were rammed with stolen cars, the front doors, and either the ATM was pulled out or, whatever's pulled out, and then they leave with the merchandise in yet another stolen car. I think you're going to see that change. But we had another incident also several months ago, which if I had been allowed to testify at that hearing for the initiative, I would have told the legislators about. We had several young, juveniles who in one night broke over 69 windows of cars all throughout Federal Way. By this time, we brought in another crew. We're searching everywhere. We found them early morning hours. We found them at the crossings in the 348th McDonald's, and they were sitting in the parking lot, and we came upon them. Well, guess what they did? They got in their car and got on the freeway. And but we tracked them down. We got one of them at least. And last Friday we referred charges. And you see, that's the thing about our police. We're just relentless.
Yeah.
And this is what I said on Como last week is, we're going to track you down. We're gonna figure out who you are. And now it's going to be a lot easier. And you're going to see, when I was in the car theft unit at the King County Prosecutor's Office, it was called CTI. And the model was really identifying, key high impact offenders, high volume offenders, and remove them from the population, and your numbers go down dramatically.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's going to happen here.
Well, yeah, you're spot on. I mean, we see the Kia boys, terrorizing South King County, and they're responsible for all these high profile incidents. You get them realizing that there's consequences now. And I think you're right. Mayor.
Yeah.
You know, I like you, right?
Of course.
You know, I'm a big Mayor Farrell fan. Huge fan.
Okay.
As much as I can be a fan of a politician, I try to, not Thank idolize you. Them.
Thank you.
I haven't had you on since you endorsed Bob Ferguson. Now, I wasn't going to let you off. For my viewers who might have a hard time reconciling the difficult positions you've taken on public safety and everything you just said in this interview up to this point, which is very sane.
Yeah. Yep.
They're having a hard time reconciling that with an endorsement of a man who never spoke out about police pursuits until like a month ago.
Right.
Who has, you know, not been a supporter, in my opinion, of law enforcement. Reconcile those two things for folks.
Well, you know, I've known Bob for over, actually, I think I may have, I don't know if I told you this or not, but I've known Bob since we were in college together. We had a couple of, we were both poli-sci majors at the UW, personal friends. I know, so a lot of it has to do with, I mean, just be, you know, candid with you, Brandy. It's a personal friendship. He also, during my King County prosecutor race, I know there was a lot of effort leaning on him to endorse my opponent. He didn't do so. In fact, he would call me up and go, okay, I'm hearing this. What about, you know, and I would talk to him. I think the other thing is, I think in just in realpolitik, I do think that he's likely going to be the next governor of the state of Washington. He is a smart guy. He was a chess champion. He was a young person. And we actually had the same chess coach when we were much older. And I have to tell you that I think that Bob is persuadable on a number of things. We're going to give him an opportunity. That's not an endorsement in perpetuity. I'm hoping he'll do a good job. But I had more to do with the personal relationship, and he stayed out of my race, and I appreciated it. And so that's,
he stayed out of your race though, Jim. He didn't, you're talking about your personal friendship. He might've stayed out, but he didn't endorse you.
Yeah, I knew he wouldn't. I knew he couldn't. Brandy, I try not to be too political, but some of this is very political. And And I think he's going to be the next governor. And I think that he's going to be an ally of Federal Way, of me. And I think when you've got, I'll be able to have an open channel with that governor and be able to talk to him in a very candid manner about what we need in the state of Washington.
So is it an endorsement of political expediency, Jim?
Oh, I don't know. I don't like the way that sounds. I endorsed him, and that's it. And so I was out, you know, it was one of those things where, and he's the only one to ask me so far. Out of everybody, there's a great story about Tip O'Neill. Did you ever hear the story about Tip O'Neill when his first run, it's in the book, Man of the House. And his first run, he was running for the state legislature in Massachusetts, which at the time was heavily controlled by the Republicans in the 30s. And he lost his first bid in 1936 for the state house. So a little while later, he goes across the street and he sees this little old lady that he's known for all of his life. And he's lamenting the fact that he lost. And he says, well, at least you voted for me. And she goes, you know, I didn't. And she goes, well, what do you, the Tip says, what do you mean? And he said, well, the lady says, you never asked me. And he says, I've been mowing your yard for all these years and I've been, you know, I'm your neighbor. And he said, well, she said, you should have asked. So Bob called me and he asked. And
so that's all it takes. So if Donald Trump calls you tomorrow and says, hey, I want your endorsement, you're gonna be like, sure, Dom.
Never.
Never. Oh, so that's different. Listen, Jim, I don't require purity of our guests, and I won't require purity of you. I think it's ridiculous. I don't care how good he is at chess. I don't think he belongs in the governor's office. And Jim, listen closely. Do you hear that? Shh, shh, shh. You listen? That's the sound of my broken heart. Almost like a knife to the chest. But yeah, I mean, I hope you're right. If he is governor, which I think there's a chance he might not be, I hope that you can have his year. And I hope that you can talk some sense into him on some of these things, because he has fallen woefully short, in all seriousness, of standing up for public safety when it really mattered. Didn't speak out about police pursuits, didn't say, Jack, while you were in Olympia fighting for give police the ability to pursue suspects. So I just have such a hard time with it, because you're so common sense on public safety, and man, he's fallen short in that realm, Jim.
Well, I could say that there are a lot of, campaigns are rough business sometimes.
Yeah.
And 2 years ago, especially down toward the end, it got pretty rough. It got pretty ugly in certain, what Karl Rove used to say he wrote a great biography that said presidential campaigns are like a knife fight in a telephone booth. And that creates a visual, doesn't it?
Yeah,
and
it does.
And I could say that it got a little rough toward there. And I was really disappointed at how certain members of my party treated me And I can tell you that I was really, it just as a matter of personal loyalty, I felt a great deal of appreciation that Bob stayed out. And I think that has to do with it. And so I want you to know that. Yeah. I appreciate that.
Yeah. I mean, he could have helped you out even more by endorsing you. And so I think that could have alleviated some of the attacks you were getting from the Democratic side. And he chose not to.
I always say, Brandy, if you want a friend, be a friend. And so that's, but I hear you. And trust me, it pains me to hear it, but I made the decision. I gave my word and there's no going back.
All right. You're still allowed on the show. I still like you. I'm just
thank
hurt.
You.
All right. Well, thank you for caring about what's happening on the public safety front down there. We'll be monitoring things, man. I hope you're right after June and we'll stay tuned. Okay.
Great. Thank you, Brandy. And thank you for the work you do.
Thanks. There it is. Federal Way Mayor Jim Farrell. I'm sure the comment line just lit up during the last half of that interview. Look, I can't, it doesn't make any sense to me. And he knows that's how I feel. There's a lot happening with, public safety that he's just been such a good advocate for. And then on the back end with Bob Ferguson, hey, if Bob is governor and he can get through to his buddy, like, by all means. But those two things just don't quite equate for me. All right, that segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. You can turn your frustration into action by signing up for their newsletter, future42.org. They'll send you lots of ways to be able to get involved and do more than just be angry at your computer screen. All right, let's dive into our segment, Unbelievable. It is the piece of video apparently seen around the world, and it features a public defender in the city of Seattle. Let's get to our segment. Unbelievable. All right, Jonathan Cho is so funny. So you guys know that there were the five or six, something in there, protesters who were arrested at Seattle City Hall for trespass. One of them was arrested for obstruction. And basically they'd been causing this big scene and banging on windows because they wanted migrants to get free housing and all of this. So anyway, they were arrested, which I was super happy about. Well, they had their initial appearance in court, and our friend Jonathan Cho was there. And I say Jonathan's funny because he dropped this video. You roll the video, Nicole. Drops his video, and he's just in there, and he's, documenting the hearing, no big deal. And you've got the, protesters, which look exactly as I thought they would, who are, waiting outside the courtroom, and then they're going in. And somewhere in Jonathan's video, a lady in a low-cut blue top with leather pleather pants makes an appearance. I'll just say it, erect nipples, a lot of makeup on. And I stop the video and I'm thinking, what's going on here? And I replay it. And I was like, Jonathan, what? Because he just put the video out there as like covering the story. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you really dropped a doozy on us. So it turns out that this was a person named Stephanie Mueller. And Stephanie is very clearly transgender. And Stephanie is a public defender for the city of Seattle, King County. Jonathan actually tracked her down and interviewed her, right? So let's play. Jonathan goes out after court and finds Stephanie to ask her some questions.
My comment about my client?
Yeah.
I just met her. She's really nice. She's really smart. She sounds like she's got the right idea about things. I really support what she's up to, and I think it's fabulous. How about that?
God, she's accused of, what is it, criminal trespass?
In the first degree, yes.
Is she innocent or guilty?
She's innocent, of course.
She's innocent, okay. Well, she's caught on video being arrested and protesting and allegedly protesting. Uh-huh. So I'm trying to get all sides. So
my client has pled not guilty. My name is Stephanie Mueller. I'm in the directory for the Washington State Bar Association. You can look me up.
Okay. So Stephanie, thank you for your time. At this point, your client is being arraigned, though.
It's all just happened. Her hearing is over.
Got it.
It's done.
All right. Do you know when her next court date is?
I do.
I'd like to maybe just keep tabs if there are...
I think that's a great idea.
Could you tell me when that is?
No.
Oh,
take care.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Okay. Here's the deal. Let me just paint a picture for people who are going to only listen to this on the show. You're really missing out today if you're not watching the show. So this is a biological man, very clearly. I don't think that's in dispute. And in fact, there's been stories done on Stephanie Mueller before and talking about, you know, her legal career. I know people are going to just say, Brandy, why are you saying her? Because I just am. It's just rolling off, okay? So if you're just listening, this is clearly a biological male that has prosthetic breasts on. And these are like a triple H. I mean, I'm a G. Can I just say that? I'm wow. a G. So I know. Don't get too excited. And those are much bigger. Those are much bigger than mine. So these is like a, this is buffoonish. That's what it is. And so she's got this really low cut blue top on, tight pants, and these absolute bazookas that are a clear prosthetic. And I think that's why she has a choker on, because it's probably covering the neckline of the prosthetic. And these prosthetics have erect nipples. And then just honestly, a caricature of what a woman's makeup might look like. That's what it's absolutely absurd. And, you know, this went crazy on social media, obviously, over the weekend. And some, just the occasional person was like, this is anti-trans and you're just attacking Stephanie because she's trans and all this. No, no woman would be allowed as a public defender to go in a courtroom and dress like that. No woman. But you get special treatment when you're transgender. And judges aren't going to say anything because, oh, I can't say anything because Stephanie's transgender and that would be offensive. And so then they just get away with it. Complete lack of decorum. I would never have been allowed as a journalist in Seattle when I covered crime and justice, when I was going in frequently to courtrooms to cover hearings, I never would have been allowed to wear a low-cut shirt exposing half my breasts with erect nipples and no bra. And leather pants, never would have been allowed. I would have been asked to leave. And so this is what, again, like the patriarchy wins. It's like you can get away with dressing like that, but only if you're a man dressed as a woman. It's complete lack of decorum and the amount of like standards that you're willing to drop just in the name of not offending and equity and wokeness and all that stuff. It's ridiculous. So I have no issue. This is not about Stephanie being transgender. I don't care what you do with your life as an adult. Now, if Stephanie Mueller were a biological woman and I saw that video and Stephanie was dressed the exact same way, but was a biological woman who just that happened to be what God gave her, but her shirt was that low cut and her nipples were erect, no bra, I would have the same problem with it. I would be like, you cannot tell me that a public defender wore that into a court of law and nothing was said to them. I've been in courtrooms where people are admonished by a judge for what they're wearing, for an attorney wearing no tie or whatever it is. You're only letting this public defender get away with that because they're transgender. It's absolute insanity. And I'm sorry, I also find it offensive as a woman. There's no way I could go in any sort of, and the Stranger, a reporter from the Stranger is like, Brandy, you know, quote tweeted me, no woman should be shamed for what they wear. You're telling me that the reporters at the Stranger, if I showed up to a press conference and I was wearing skin-tight clothing as the blonde old Fox News lady, and I was wearing skin-tight clothing with half my breasts exposed, no bra, erect nipples, you're telling me that the reporters at the Stranger wouldn't say something about it? Wouldn't tweet about it, wouldn't take a picture and do a story about it. They would. They absolutely would. And I'm sorry, if transgender people want to be treated equally, then let's treat them equally and say that that outfit would not be tolerated if any other person were wearing it. It's truly, truly unbelievable. I'm sure that YouTube will demonetize my video over that. Whatever. What are you going to do? All right. I have encouraged you guys to take the First Mark challenge because why would you not? You can get someone to handle all of your insurance needs for free. Never cost you a dime. And you'll actually know that you have the insurance you need at the best possible rate. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. What the FirstMark Challenge entails is you go to them. You talk to them about your insurance needs, your current insurance. Maybe you need better insurance. Maybe you need to save a little bit of money. They go out, they shop their carriers for you. They come back and they tell you what they found. And you can decide, do you want to become a member of the FirstMark family or not? I just love this testimonial from Eric in Woodinville. He sent us an email and said he listens to the show all the time and he decided to do the FirstMark Challenge, but he was sort of skeptical because he's like, I've been dealing with my own insurance. Why do I need an insurance broker at this juncture? Well, he decided to do it anyway, probably to support our show. Thanks, Eric. They ended up saving 30% on his auto policy and 70% on his homeowner's policy. And now he's like, it literally made me richer doing it. So you're never going to pay them anything, and you can save a bunch of money. It's a no-brainer. You just got to carve out an hour of time to do it. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. They work for you. All right, let's get to some national news quick, international news, so to speak. So Canada is just as much of a disaster as the United States when it comes to what the far-left ideology has been doing. And Justin Trudeau, the prime minister. So we've played a clip before from Justin Trudeau's opponent, conservative leader Pierre Poilievre. I remember we talked about it because that's exactly what I did to his name at the time. Pierre Poilievre. Anyway, this guy's a genius. This guy is brilliant. And I love him. And I love everything he has to say. But in particular, I saw this clip from him over the weekend that I thought was just about the most spot-on thing I've heard when he was assessing whether Justin Trudeau is truly a liberal.
Justin Trudeau is not a liberal. It might surprise you to hear me say that. He's not a liberal. Liberals used to believe in liberty, and conservatives believed in conserving it. That was the common sense consensus we had in Canada. Justin Trudeau does not believe in liberty. He believes in government control. He wants to control your money. He wants to control your kids. He wants to control the economy, control your speech, control your bank account. He wants to control everything. That is illiberal. It's the opposite of liberalism. I don't want to run your life. I want to run your government. And a government that does a few things well rather than a lot of things poorly, a government that minds its own business and lets people live their lives. That is the tradition.
I don't want to run your life. I want to run your government. It's the most succinct pitch I can think of for moving away from these progressive politicians. And I just love this guy. And he's catching on in Canada. He's doing pretty well in Canada. And I think given some of the overreach, I mean, we've certainly experienced it here, but I honestly think it's been a little worse in Canada. You know, overreach throughout the pandemic and all of that. They're infringing on free speech rights. They don't have the same constitution we have, obviously. And so they have much stricter gun laws there and all of this. And I think people are just sick of it. And so this guy, Pierre Poilievre, he comes in at the right time with the right message. And he's spot on. Isn't that what everyone should want? A government that doesn't run your life, a leader that doesn't want to run your life, just wants to run the government well? And that's what I don't get about people who support progressives and politicians who want to pass all these new bills. I mean, they introduce like 1,000 new bills a session. Not all of those pass, but that's a ton. We don't need any new bills. It's like they create bills just for the sake of creating bills and rules and restrictions and taxes and fines and fees. And they're so focused on all the little things like, oh, this and this special interest group wants this and this and this. And they totally fail the big picture. You're filling on all the major things, on homelessness, on crime, on mental health, on housing and affordability and transportation. They can't even do the big things right, and they want to focus on all these little things. It's ridiculous. So I'm watching really closely what happens up in Canada. Love this Pierre guy. And maybe there's going to be a little bit of a revolt up there. It certainly seems like the conservatives in Canada are on track for that. I don't know when it's going to be America's turn, but hopefully a few months from now. All right, let's talk about the solar eclipse, shall we? So it's so fascinating because I was watching all the news, and they were like, emergency administrators for states, like states declared states of emergency around the eclipse. And I was watching this emergency preparedness lady who was telling people to stock up on food and gasoline and batteries. And I'm like, what is going on? Isn't the eclipse only like 15 minutes or something, 20 minutes in totality? Very short.
I mean, I think it's like an hour.
But... Oh, whatever. I was like, why is this an emergency preparedness situation? And then there are people in all these rabbit holes about, oh, our electrical grid might go down. This could be the end of the world. Cell service might end. It's very similar vibes to a, what do you call it, 2000?
The Y2K.
Very similar. And I don't remember this sort of like weird media coverage of government panic in 2018. Was it 2017 or 2018 when there was an eclipse?
Oh.
There was some of that, but not like this. You know, because I remember because Trump looked right up at it. When he was like, don't look at it. He's like. So there was that. Very strange. So I asked you guys in our, and we didn't see the eclipse, by the way. One, because our curtains were drawn. But two, it was a little cloudy out. So I don't think anybody here got any impression of it whatsoever. But I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll, you know, I talked about the fact that there had been all these warnings to stock up on gas or whatever it is. So I asked you, did you make any emergency preparations ahead of the eclipse? 98% of you said no. I was just really trying to gauge whether, like, you guys are conspiracists, real conspiracists or something. Julie said, I voted no because I didn't take special precautions for this, but I already tried to prepare for outages and shortages in general. That is a very good practice. You know, having, what do they say, 2 weeks? Having 2 weeks' supply of emergency goods on hand is never a bad reason for that.
Absolutely.
Been making these investments, water filtrations that don't depend on electricity, emergency power backup with solar, keeping all gas tanks full with extra cans, non-perishable food supplies, important that's great. Julie, I know where I'm coming. Hey, Julie, drop your address in the comments so when the earth ends, Nicole and I can come and, and eat some of your food. Steve said, of course, any sane person should be in a bunker for safety today, away from the loons following every second of this event. Yeah, that's a good point. Krista says, I'm sorry, what? It's a freaking eclipse, people. Why didn't we have this hysteria a few years ago? Am I missing something? I was hearing whispering of the world ending today, but I think the people declaring a state of emergency have lost their dang marbles. Now, in defense of some of those states, they're also dealing with this huge influx of tourists, like my mom, who just decided randomly with her friend to drive to Illinois for her birthday and watch the eclipse. So long lines at gas stations, maybe a strain on things like grocery stores. We see that in some areas of Washington, like out in George, Washington, George, the town in Washington, that there's always these concerns when there's big music festivals out there that, like, they're, you know, all their resources are strained because it's just a small community. So if you were on that sort of line of the eclipse, then I can see there being some emergency situations where your infrastructure is really, really tested. And maybe it wouldn't be a bad idea if you made sure your gas tank was full in case you were waiting in long lines and you had groceries, et cetera. So I can understand some of this, but like the power grid going out and all of that, I didn't have a backup plan for the show. If the power would have gone out, we just would have had no show today. So let me see one more. Kathleen says, yes and no. Way ahead, I've prepared for any eventuality since the trucker strike of 72. I don't remember that. I wasn't alive. The only special preparation for the eclipse was eclipse viewing eye protection. But the Great Northwest cloud cover made that unnecessary. Yeah, the cloud cover was your eclipse viewing protection. But my mom sent me a picture. It was pretty clear where I should have put it up, but pretty clear when she was there in Illinois. And my sister sent me a picture from Miami. And it was cloudy, but you could kind of see it was very partial there, but it was interesting. So we were in here getting a show ready for you guys, so we can't enjoy the eclipse.
I saw the lunar eclipse
with the rest of the world.
Or last year. That was cool.
Yeah. It's just a long way to drive for a little bit of time and seeing that. I'll just watch it on the news, right? All right. Before we see, I'm just working. I'm doing good with paper, right? I'm doing okay.
Well.
Nicole was
doing
in a panic. You were a little panicked.
No, that wasn't because of you being on paper. It was because of me doing all the work the last hour of the show.
I don't know what you're talking about. That's your job, man. I'm just kidding. True. I was like, hey, my computer is dead. Can you finish the show? Anyway, we had Zach Abraham on the show on Thursday. Zach, of course, is with Bulwark Capital. They specialize in risk management, making sure they protect your retirement portfolio. And, you know, one of the things he's talked to us about is, man, the stock market's wild right now. And that cannot be your only barometer for how the economy is doing, because the stock market makes no sense the way it's been going. And then you have things like Tesla, which is a very popular stock, which is not doing very well right now.
My opinion, the bloom has fallen off the rose with Tesla, and it was always going to happen because the price of the stock was so far out in front of what the reality was. And you knew a lot of this stuff was vaporware all the way along. But when you got a bunch of shareholders that are dyed in the wool and part of the cult, they'll keep pushing the stock up. But you just know eventually, you know, adults know that just because I can throw a baseball really high in the air, and I can throw it so high you'll lose sight of it, it doesn't mean it went to orbit. I would bet you every dollar I've got that baseball's going to land on the ground. And Tesla's just in the process of landing on the ground.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I want to see Zach throw a baseball so high I can't see it. I kind of don't believe him. So we're going to have to test that out. That could be our next commercial for Bulwark Capital, is Zach proving that he can throw a baseball so high it almost leaves orbit. Anyway, yeah, he might not be able to throw a baseball that high, but I can tell you that he's very, very good at what he does, and that is managing risk in retirement portfolios. You only get one retirement. There is no reason, especially in 2024, with everything going on, the presidential election, these crazy volatile markets, global unrest, there's no reason to leave it open to chance and not have active risk management happening with your portfolio. So my advice is having a free Know Your Risk portfolio review with Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital. It's just a good way to see if you're overexposed to risk. There's absolutely no obligation. So you can sign up for that risk review now at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. All right, let's get to some of your questions, comments on the live stream on Ian Golosh, the Seattle public school teacher who has to be out of a job at this point, on camera saying that it was defensible to murder innocent Israeli women at a music festival, denying that innocent Israeli women were raped and killed. Cindy Schutman says he's not a teacher, it's a ruse, using the title as a platform to spew his perspective and political rhetoric. And I'll tell you, I snooped on him a little bit. His dad is the same way. His dad is like, I mean, I didn't put it out there because like his dad isn't the public school teacher, but his dad lives in DC or something and is very pro-socialist, speaks out about, very similar. I mean, I don't know if he's said the same kind of fringe stuff, but you can totally see where Ian Golosh gets it from.
I wonder where he thinks his next job is going to be, because I don't see you getting another
chair
job.
Chair of the Washington State Democratic Party.
Well, that could be. But I mean, as a teacher,
Bob
this
Ferguson's
is
campaign
the only
director.
Place you could teach, yeah. I would think, and I hope. And you've just now even crossed their line. We're hoping.
Well, we hope, yeah. 100%. So we'll have to follow up tomorrow and see if anything's happened. Mm-hmm. But and you're going to reach out to OSPI
yes.
on that. Mm-hmm. Jeff Monahan. Might just be me, but I have not supported the public school system for quite some time. I think more and more people are feeling that way, which is a bummer because there
not
are
you.
Good teachers and they not get overshadowed you. By these insane teachers. So mm-hmm. we've tried to highlight some of the good teachers, you know, down Eatonville and all this stuff. But man, it's the wild ones that really get our attention. Anna Burt says, I can't tell you how happy I am to have my daughter in private school. I've gone to public school when I was a kid, but right now, absolutely not. I would rather compromise and pay for my children's education than dealing with the craziness. And I mean, you're blessed to be able to do it. I feel bad, Anna, for the parents who can't,
right.
cannot make it work. They can't homeschool. They can't afford private school, which is why I think school choice is so important. Parents have to have another option. It's like they don't want their kids to go there. They're paying tax money. They should have another option besides these, especially if you're in the Seattle Public School District.
It's also why, I mean, the Seattle Times just came out this morning with an article about their fund, like the deficit yeah. they are working with. And it's not going to get better mm-hmm. because they're not changing the reason people are leaving. A lot of schools in this state are in deficit right now yeah. and really panicking about next year. And I'm sorry, but it's not getting better if you continue to push this agenda on these kids.
Right. And I mean, again, I go back to, if you're a Jewish parent in the Seattle Public School District right now, why would you want your kid to go there? When they're allowing this mm-mm. blatant Hamas propaganda from teachers and all this, it's crazy. All right, on the squatters and the Washington Post calling the squatter thing just a contrived right-wing controversy, Anton Valter with the best comment on this. Mm-hmm. I should have thought of this. He said, octopus farming is an extremely rare issue in Washington, but we got a law for that. Yeah. So you're saying we shouldn't care about the squatter issue because it's rare? Mm-hmm. You passed a bill to ban octopus farming in a state that doesn't have any octopus farming. Not only is it rare, it's non-existent in the state of Washington. Mm-hmm. And you still passed a bill for it. You guys do stuff, hate crimes. Hate crimes are very rare. They're very rare. Yet you're setting up, at the cost of $2 million a year, a specific hate crime hotline because of a bill passed in Olympia this past legislative session. Police, deadly use of force. Very rare for police in the context of the grand scheme of all the encounters they have with the public. Yet that has dominated political discourse for like 3 years. So if it's rare, but it's a thing progressives care about, totally fine to absolutely lose their ever-loving minds out over it. But if it's rare and it's something that's impacting evil landlords, totally manufactured controversy. give me a freaking break, these people.
Until it affects them, they just don't care.
No, they don't. But that's okay, because it's going to eventually, the tide is going to turn on the crazy. A total eclipse of common sense. Yeah. Country guy, protecting your home is now a right-wing talking point. When can I move into the White House? Yeah, let's squat. That's so good. When can I squat in the White House? Right? That's the people's house.
I mean, it
so kick me out. You don't think that I'd be in prison like the J6ers. Although, you know. You know how I feel about J6. Federal Way Mayor. Oh, I know. The comments are going to be rough, I'm assuming. Matthew Cook. Ah, so it's I scratch your back, you scratch mine. Yeah, that doesn't really hold water that, hey, I think he's going to win, so I'm going to endorse him. There are a lot of political candidates who I know are going to win who I would never consider giving my endorsement to because they're the antithesis of everything I stand for. So I get it. Personal friendships are a thing. Had Bob Ferguson endorsed Mayor Farrell during his run for King County prosecutor, I might feel differently about
it. More understandable.
But the fact that he stayed out, that to me that's actually being a crap friend.
And
that's being a really crappy friend.
In the explanation he gave you of why he's going to endorse him, he, you know, makes a case against Bob not endorsing him.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds ridiculous.
It does. And Nightwolf says, this guy sounded really good until you brought up Bob.
I know.
Yeah. And look, I don't demand purity.
Like
I don't believe in vilifying somebody who disagrees with the candidates I support. I mean, God knows that. I was vilified like crazy on social media over the weekend. Lauren Culp called me the B word multiple times, which he's certifiably insane. Look, Lauren
Culp. He really is. I mean.
You're playing checkers. I'm playing chess. We're not even on the same playing field, sir. But yeah, and so I'm not going to vilify here's the thing. If Jim Farrell genuinely supported Bob Ferguson and had maybe some retorts for why I'm wrong about his position on public safety and things he's done, fine. Like, agree to disagree. But he can't defend it.
No.
He clearly can't defend it.
No, but you know what? Every time they say, well, he's probably going to be the governor, I just can't wait until that's really not the case.
No, and that's what we need.
So, yep, just keep saying that.
Right.
Just keep being so sure about that it doesn't happen. That's what I hope. Just like Hillary and Trump.
Right. But
Trump had no chance.
That's true. I already said, I remember watching election night, 1% chance for Trump to all of a sudden he's the president. But we need reasonable Democrats to endorse Dave Reichert in the general election. We need that. And I'm hoping that some of the Democrats who've endorsed Mark Mullett, because I think Mark Mullett would be a fine governor. He would certainly be better than Bob Ferguson. Have I disagreed with Mark on some things? Yes, but Mark has no path to victory in the current landscape. But I hope some of the Democrats who've supported his campaign will come out and say, okay, if it's not Mark Mullett, we're going to go with Dave Reichert.
That feels very out of reach.
No,
I don't think
so.
Because they're
if
they assume he gets in, then they're going to have to be working with him and they don't want to piss him off.
I'll bet you $100 right now. Mark Mullett endorses Dave Reichert.
Oh, yeah, but I think Mark's done after this, right?
That's fine. So I think he endorses Dave Reichert and hopefully his supporters would then endorse Dave.
Yeah.
In the general.
I hope.
We'll see.
I don't know.
A girl can wish. Yeah. On the public defender with the big old fake knockers who just feels like she can flaunt them in a court of law. Kathleen Brose says the public defender is being disrespectful to women dressing like that as a member of the bar. She clearly wants attention. The makeup is hideous. Even the makeup, it's like, it's a caricature. It's a caricature of women.
Yes, absolutely.
Ronald Reagan says, exactly. Ronald, is that you?
By the profile picture, I don't believe so.
Okay.
But
gotcha.
Not junior anyway.
That was just total disrespect to the court. He should have been instantly kicked out. But nobody will say anything because you can't offend a transgender person.
Something's got to change.
Something's got to change. And that's why I just tweeted about it. I took screenshots from Jonathan Cho's story. And I'm like, look, I'll be the one to say it. No woman would be allowed to dress like this in a court of law. Absolutely not. Outrageous. Let's see. Spencer Cole, we'll end with you. I just received a semi-bird mailer and it went straight to the recycle like Brandy taught me. Not just semi-bird, for the record. I've said all the mailers. You take them. Straight into the trash. Nope, recycle. Straight into the recycling bin. like that.
Done.
Because they're all full of lies. They're all worthless.
Unless there are candidates, but most of them are full of lies.
Unless I send you something in the mail, then read it. Okay. all right. Nicole, thank you. Good comments today per the usual. Wow, we're about to round this sucker out. No computer? Don't need one. Let's get to our closing sanity check. As Nicole said, as we were discussing this story before the show, she said, what a sad state of affairs when the person making the most sense in Congress is Senator John Fetterman. And these days, it really seems to be like he is the one standing up for common sense and putting rational thinking over political party. So he did an interview, and the New York Post covered it. The headline, Senator John Fetterman blasts squatters and violent crime, saying, quote, I am not woke. And I'll tell you, these quotes are not woke, and they're amazing. Quote, squatters have no rights, Fetterman said, adding that the issue was one he often dealt with when he was mayor of working-class Braddock, Pennsylvania. Quote, how can you even pretend that this is anything other than you're just breaking the law? I am not woke. It's wild that you go away on a long trip for 30 days, someone breaks into your home, and suddenly they have rights? This is crazy. Like if somebody stole your car, and then they held it for 30 days, then somehow you now have some rights? Exactly. Yes, yes, John Fetterman. He went on to tear into soft-on-crime policies that critics said contributed to the fatal shooting of NYPD detective Jonathan Diller. Quote, I have gone to police funerals, Fetterman said. If this individual is convicted, then he should spend the rest of his life in prison and never have an opportunity to get out. The accused killer, Guy Rivera, had at least 21 prior arrests, mainly for drug and assault, before he fatally shot Diller during a traffic stop in Queens last month. Fetterman says he believes in second chances, but not 20. Quote, if you have those kinds of established records, it doesn't serve any greater goal to allow people that are offending to not be held accountable, Fetterman said. And ladies and gentlemen, that has been your closing sanity check brought to you, of all people, by Senator John Fetterman. That has been it for today's episode of Undivided. One note, show note. We will not have a show tomorrow. I have an event to go to with law enforcement, and so we will not have a show tomorrow. However, I'm going to post an election interview. We've been doing some 2024 election interviews, so I will have an election interview posted for you tomorrow so you can have something for your viewing pleasure, and then we will be back with our regular live show on Wednesday. I try not to cancel shows for events, but this is a really important one that I want to make sure to get to, and Nicole's coming with me too. So we will see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon. Thank you so much for supporting this show. Thank you for supporting our mission and our movement to give common sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. If you have not signed up to support the show already, you can do that for just $5 a month. UndividedPod.com. UndividedPod.com. You can be part of our growing community that is just trying to make the world a better place. Okay, bye.